Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Matot Masai. This week, Neiman Novetzky discusses Matot Masai. Neiman Novetzky is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Neiman Novetzky.
Thank you, Larry. This week, we read Parshiot Matot Masai, the very end of Sefer Bimidbar. We find ourselves in the 40th year in the desert, and the Tanakh, after having told us about some of the camps that we've been sitting in for the last 40 years and dealing with some laws that relate to inheritance, turns to a different topic, the topic of Arei Miklat, commonly translated as cities of refuge. These relate to the laws of murder and homicide, both the Horeg B'Mezid, one who murders intentionally, and the Horeg B'Shogeg, one who kills inadvertently. In the next 20 minutes or so, we're going to look deeply into these laws to try to understand, how does Tanakh view the inadvertent killer? How does its view compare to the prevalent view in the ancient Near East at the time? And what does this teach us about the Torah's underlying values? In Perek Lamed Hei, in chapter 35, Tanakh distinguishes between two cases, the case of murder and the case of unintentional killing. Let's read a few psukim, a few verses inside. Ve'im bechli varzel hikahu, ve'amot, rotzeachu, mot yumat ha-rotzeach. If one goes and kills another using an iron utensil, he is considered a murderer. And as a result, he deserves the punishment of death. The imbe avinyad, and similarly, if he hits him with a rock, or bechli etziad, or if he hits him with some type of utensil made out of wood, rotzeachu mot yumat harotzeach, he's considered a murderer. In contrast, we're told afterwards, the imbe feta, below eva hadafo, if suddenly, without any hatred, he pushes him, oh shlich alav kokli, below tzdiya, or he goes and he throws something at him without intention of trapping him, or even if he uses a weapon which can kill, but below ra'ot, he does this without seeing. And he's not his enemy. And he doesn't intend for any harm to happen to him. In that case, the person is not considered a murderer. He does not get the punishment of death, but rather the congregation saves this person from the blood avenger. A blood avenger, Goel Hadam, is someone who is from the family of the murdered, who had a right in the ancient Near East as a whole to go and kill the person who had murdered his kin. In Tanakh, we see that this person has no right to kill an inadvertent murderer, to kill someone who had not intentionally killed his kin. And therefore, we're told that this person who accidentally killed is sent to an Ir Miklat. He goes to this, again, commonly translated word as city of refuge. And there, the person is not allowed to kill him. And we're told that he has to stay in this city of refuge, Ad Mota Kohen HaGadol, until the death of the high priest. These laws raise several questions. What exactly defines the difference between an intentional murderer and an unintentional killer, according to Tanakh? Second, how do we view these cities of refuge? What exactly is their purpose? And third, why is it that he has to stay specifically until the end, till the death of the high priest? What does that have to do with anything? So to answer our first question, it seems like Tanakh actually distinguishes mainly with regards to the motivation or the intent of the person killing. If the person has no hatred, he's not an enemy of the person he's killing. He did not intend for the person to die. He's then considered an unintentional killer. And he goes then to the city of refuge, to the Ir Miklat. What is the nature of this Ir Miklat? Why does he go there? On a first reading, I think, Tanakh seems to suggest that this is to save the person who did the killing. This person, perhaps, is considered totally innocent. He doesn't deserve any death because he didn't mean to kill the person he killed. Yet we know that he's in danger of losing his life because the Goel Hadam, the blood avenger, might come to go and seek revenge and go and kill him. And so we set up these cities that he can run to so that he won't get killed. If so, perhaps then, Tanakh says an intentional murderer is totally guilty. He deserves death. An unintentional killer, though, perhaps, is totally innocent. And so we try to make sure that he has a place of safety in these Arei Miklat, in these cities of refuge. That, though, is not the only way to understand an Ir Miklat. The word itself in modern Hebrew, and also in rabbinic Hebrew, would support the understanding that we've been saying until now. A miklat in modern Hebrew is a shelter, a place of refuge. But it's important to note that the word has other meanings as well. Even in modern Hebrew, when we say the word klita, we refer to reception or absorption. And in Tanakh, even though the noun comes up mainly only in context of our cities of refuge, the verb comes in contrast to a different word, the word lehistarea. That word means to spread out, which would suggest that the verb kuf lamed tet, kalat, perhaps means to confine. And according to some, and I'll read to you from the translation of Olam HaTanakh, Lekach tiyeh mashma'ut hamunach miklat ma'atzar, va'arei miklat, arei ma'asar. If we understand the word miklat to be more like an absorption, a container, something that confines, well then a city of refuge isn't just a shelter, but it's actually a place of imprisonment, a place that holds you that you're not allowed out of. And if so, it seems that we're supposed to view these cities of refuge as having a dual purpose. On one hand, yes, it's a place of refuge. It's a shelter. This person who killed inadvertently does not deserve to die. He has a place that he can run to, that he knows he'll be safe there. At the same time, it's also a punishment. This person did spill blood. And he wasn't totally innocent. Tanakh does not view him as being a totally innocent person. It recognizes there had to be some negligence there as well. He took someone's life, and if you take someone's life, you need to be punished. And in effect, his punishment is one of exile. He's forced to leave his family and his home and everything he knew, his place of comfort, to go and live in this city of refuge, in this Ir Miklat, for who knows how long, until whenever it happens to be that the high priest dies. Rav David Tzvi Hoffman points out these two different aspects of the Ir Miklat, and he says, he points out in Tanakh there's a difference between the intentional murderer and the inadvertent killer. Only the inadvertent killer is given this city of refuge. He says, but at the same time, the exile to this city of refuge didn't just serve a protective purpose to go and protect him from the blood avenger. Because if so, he then should have the permission to decide by himself whether he wants to forego this protection. But rather, it seems though that this exile, this going to the city of refuge, is not just for his protection, but rather for his atonement, for the sin that he did in spilling blood. If so, then, the Ir Miklat has a duality, a safety place and a punishment, meaning that we view the person who killed inadvertently in a dual way, someone who on one hand is somewhat innocent, but on the other hand is somewhat guilty. And to some extent, this highlights the way that Tanakh values the life of a human being. On one hand, anyone who goes and spills the blood of a human being must get punished. This inadvertent killer must get punished. On the other hand, we have a catch-22. He didn't kill intentionally, so we can't punish him with death. He doesn't deserve death because we value his life also. And thus, he goes to this city of refuge. Now, the choice of city of refuge is actually interesting. All of the cities of refuge were cities of the Levites. And one wonders, why was that the case? Why were these cities chosen? And the answer seems to relate to this dual nature of the cities. On one hand, they're supposed to be places of shelter. If so, they need to be spread out. If a person has to run there and get there before the blood avenger can reach him, what if he lives in the Galil and the Yer Miklat and the city of refuge was all the way down in the Negev? He'd never get there in time. So Tanakh specifies that we need some on one side of Jordan, some on the other side of the Jordan, spread out enough so that everyone is within reach of attaining his goal of getting there in time. At the same time, these are cities of the Levites. One of the jobs of the Levites were to educate the people. And it's possible that if part of their time in this city of refuge is supposed to be a punishment and atonement, perhaps specifically the cities of the Levites were chosen because they're the ones who could educate and help reform and help him come to his rehabilitation that was perhaps necessary after such an act. When we compare the laws of Tanakh with the laws that were prevalent in the ancient Near East at the time, we see this value on human life even more highlighted. In the ancient Near East, there was similarly a concept of a blood avenger. But unlike Tanakh, there was no differentiation between an inadvertent killing and an intentional killing. A blood avenger was allowed to go and kill whoever killed his kin, whether they did it intentionally or not. Similarly, there was also a concept of refuge. Often, temples were a place of refuge, and people could go and run to their temple and get refuge there. Interestingly, though, here too there's no difference between the intentional murderer and the unintentional killer. For both, if the person reached that temple, they were safe. Tanakh, in contrast, specifies that an intentional murderer, even if he goes to a mizbeach, even if he goes and holds on to the altar, from there, me'im mizbechiti kachanu lamut. You could go and take him from those holding on to the altar. You can go and take him to receive his punishment. An intentional murderer has no refuge, according to Tanakh, because an intentional murderer intentionally took someone's life. There's no way that you can go and forgo his punishment. One last difference between the two is also interesting. In Tanakh, it specifies that there's no choice of alternative justice. A person has to go to the city of refuge. A person has to be killed if he killed somebody else. You don't have the option of taking some type of a monetary fine instead. Not so in many of the laws in the ancient Near East, where one had a choice. If the murdered family decides that they'd rather receive a monetary payment, in many cases that was allowed. Interestingly, in some of the laws in the ancient Near East, to begin with, a monetary fine was the price that you pay for a murderer as opposed to receiving some type of a capital punishment. I'll just give you one example from the Hittite laws. If anyone kills a Hittite merchant, he shall give 100 minas of silver and pledge his estate as security. This is the initial law. For killing, the punishment is a monetary fine. In Tanakh, not so. If you kill someone, you took the ultimate value. You took a life. Your life has to be taken in its stead. But if you did it unintentionally, chas v'shalom, that his life should now be taken instead. With that, we move to our third question. Why does the inadvertent killer have to stay in the city of refuge specifically until the death of the Kohen Gadol? What's the relationship between the death of the Kohen Gadol of the high priest and this person leaving to his freedom? We're going to look at a selection of commentators on the topic, and most of them relate back to this dual nature of the Ir Miklat as a place of safety and a place of punishment. We'll start with the Sforno. Sforno tells us, Kasher bier shehagalut yala shogeg, ubiyot minei hashkagot bilti shavot, ki mehem krovot laones, umehem krovot el hamizid. Sforno points out, when someone is sent into exile because he had killed accidentally, he says, there's a problem though. There's varying degrees of what's considered accidental and what's considered negligent. Somebody kills accidentally, and it's very, very close to mazid, very, very close to an intentional. There's a ton of negligence. The person was drunk driving, and he should have known better, etc. On the other hand, there are cases of unintentional killing, which are very close to onus, very close to someone doing it almost innocently. How could we punish them equally, that both of them have to go and stay in this city of refuge for the same amount of time? So he answers, therefore, Natan legalut zman bilti shaveh b'chol hashogegim. Therefore, Tanakh tells us not everyone actually stays in these cities of refuge for the same amount of time. Ki mehem shetiyesh gegagato ma'at. Someone who had just a little bit of accidental, was just a little accident, he'll stay in the city of refuge just a little bit of time. Kol demitat kohen. He might end up being there just for a month before the kohen dies. And other people might actually end up living their entire lives in the city of refuge because the Kohen dies after they died. He says, and this is God's justice. God ensures that each one has to stay in the city of refuge the exact amount of time that he deserved. Sforno here is obviously viewing that Ir Miklat is mainly a place of punishment. And he says, though, but how does this punishment become a just punishment? How does everyone get to stay there the right amount of time based on the amount of negligence that he had used when he went and killed? And he says, God ensures that the Kohen Gadol is going to die at the right amount for each person, meaning one person who is very negligent might end up being there for years and years and years. Someone who is just slightly negligent and was hardly at all to blame might end up being there just for a month before the Kohen Gadol dies. Now, this is a very fascinating suggestion. And on one level, Sforno's totally struggling with the idea of how do we make this just? At the same time, his answer seems quite unrealistic. How exactly is it going to work if you have 10 people who killed within 2 months of each other, that it's going to work out for every single one of them that the Kohen Gadol dies at the right amount, at the exact time? This works, of course, mainly for someone who views God's providence as being over every single little aspect of life to the extent that 10 people can kill and it'll work out for each of them that they get there exactly the right time so that they get the exact right amount of punishment. For many, though, this seems a bit implausible. And so others look to different suggestions. Abarbanel tells us, Vamar sheyeshev ba ad mota kohen, the fisha kohen hagadol hayasar vegadol biyisrael vekadosh elokav ubumoto kol ha'am yecharad. He tells us the people had to stay there until the death of the kohen gadol because the kohen gadol's death, due to the fact that he was such an important person and so holy, etc., when he died, it caused all of the people to tremble. V'hachai yitina libo kimei hadam kitzel olam, and it makes people reflect on their lives and how it could go by in just an instant. And it would lead people to say to themselves, oh, why am I going to go and take another life? None of us live forever anyway. Abarbanel here is obviously viewing the Ir Miklat mainly as a place of shelter, a place where someone runs to so that he doesn't get killed by the blood avenger. And he suggests that the reason that the person can leave at the when a Kohen Gadol dies is because that's when the person will no longer be in danger. Why not? He says the death of an important person leads people to reflect. They reflect on life. They reflect on their actions. It's going to lead this blood avenger to lose his fury and his anger at the person who had unintentionally killed, thinking, oh, life is so short. Look, this person just died. In general, tragedies, catastrophes, important people dying, me people think about things. And so he suggests this blood avenger will no longer have a desire to kill. And so the unintentional murderer can leave the city of refuge without fear of being killed. A third approach is taken by Shaddai. He tells us, why do we wait for the death of the Kohen Gadol? He says, one of the jobs of the Kohen is to atone for our sins. One way he does this is via the sacrifices that we bring. But he says even more so, when the Kohen Gadol dies, his death itself serves as an atonement, which there's no other that is higher than that. So according to Shaddai, again, the Ir Miklat perhaps is mainly a punishment for the person who's run there. And when has he been considered atoned for his sin? When the Kohen Gadol dies. This death atoned for his sins. Now, on one hand, when we read this, it sounds very Christian, right? The death of Jesus atoned for everybody's sins. The death of the Kohen atoned for everybody's sins. But I think there's a different way of understanding it. And Olam HaTanach takes this general approach and explains it in light of the ancient Near East. It tells us, Tanakh believes, in laharichat chayei ha'adam, v'al kein in lahem tmura. There's no value that you could put on human life, and that's why there's no exchange for it. Unlike in the ancient Near Eastern codes that we saw beforehand, where someone could pay money to compensate for a death, Tanakh doesn't believe that. There's no value to human life. There's no way that you could go and pay for it. And to some extent, every death deserves a death. He tells us, Mikivan shegam rotzeach bishgaga nechshav kishofech dam. Even if one unintentionally killed, he's still a spiller of blood. Yachol hagoel hargo lelo chashash meonish. A blood avenger would think that he can go and kill him without having to fear punishment. Ulam meachar shemaseu haya bishogeg, but because this person was unintentionally killing, yachol moto shel hakohen hagadol lavo bimkom moto hu. The death of the Kohen Gadol can come instead of his death. The understanding here is that a death deserves a death. But we have a problem. This unintentional killer doesn't deserve death because it was unintentional. But the death itself still deserves a death to come in order to atone for it. And so perhaps the death of the Kohen Gadol, his natural death, serves as that atonement that was necessitated by the very action of spilling blood. Olam HaTanach goes a step further, which I thought was an interesting way of looking at it. He says, and why dafka in this way? He says, harotzeach b'mezid yumat b'kavana. And an intentional murderer, he dies intentionally. Blood needs blood. You spilled blood. Your life needs to be spilled. You did it intentionally. We will intentionally kill you. Harotzeach b'shkaga, but one who unintentionally kills, on the other hand, shekipid chayim b'mikra, just by happenstance he happened to take a life, yaleitz l'chakot l'mavet ha'kohen ha'gadol kedei l'hishtachwer mi'ir ha'miklat. He has to wait for a happen chant, whenever it happens to be that the Kohen Gadol will die. So in looking at the laws of the Horeg B'Shogeg and the Horeg B'Mezid, the intentional killer and the unintentional killer, we see how Tanakh values, ultimately, the value of life. Life is so important that on one hand, if you kill, you deserve to be killed. But in a catch-22, if you unintentionally kill, even though one deserves to be killed because someone had been killed, you yourself don't. And so we come up with this very interesting institution of Ere Miklat, cities of refuge, with this dual nature of a place of shelter to protect you, but at the same time, a place of punishment where atonement means to be taken before you can go free. And with that, I wish you all a Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Nima. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.